Hello and welcome to episode number 14 of Chell Squared. I'm your host, Andrew Chelney, and oh man, do we have a show for you today. Before we get started, please make sure to follow the podcast on Twitter at Chell Squared and on Facebook at Chell Squared for more hot takes, news about future guests, poll questions, and a whole lot more. By the way, please rate the show on iTunes if you enjoy listening. It means a whole lot to me, and every time you either like the show on SoundCloud or give it a rating on iTunes, a puppy gets a hug from its owner. I don't make the rules, just spreading the knowledge here. Tonight's show is all about the San Jose Sharks post the Erik Karlsson trade. We'll break down everything you need to know and more about the swap that gave San Jose arguably the best defenseman in the entire world while giving Ottawa not that. We'll talk about the San Jose blue line that now features Erik Karlsson, Marc-Edouard Vlasic, and Brent Burns, what the realistic goal for the Sharks is this season, how good the prospect chart in San Jose is right now, how the Sharks will address the seemingly lack of offensive depth on the bottom six, especially with only $1.7 million in cap space, according to Cap Friendly, of course. We'll also get into a little bit of Martin Jones and if he is potentially good enough to carry the team to a Stanley Cup victory. We've seen him get the team to the final in 2016. Now can he deliver the Stanley Cup to San Jose? All of that and tonight's poll question and a whole lot more. Here with me to argue Sharks hot takes and break down everything I just listed off is lead editor of TealTownUSA.com, Eric Kura. Eric, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. TealTown is excited for this season to get going, and now with Erik Karlsson around, oh boy, it's even more invigorated.
Absolutely. So before we start the show, you say you've been a Sharks fan literally since day one. Talk to me a little bit about that process. How did you get into hockey, and how did that grow into the love that you have for the team and the sport now?
It started back in 1991 when my favorite color was teal. and that kind of started the way a little bit, and just how unique the game of hockey was. I remember very well listening to our radio play-by-play guy, Dan Ruzanowski, on like my little Walkman that I had going on, and just started growing and growing. And the following season, I had injured my knee, where I felt like I was going to be needing to rehab, and they suggested to go skate. And so that added input. And then that following year was the third year, after a horrific 71 loss season and taking ribbing left and right from classmates in school. The Sharks make the playoffs the first time. They come a crossbar away from going to the conference final against Vancouver, and then who knows, but it just generated from there and there.
That's awesome. I mean, that's it's such an unusual thing to be a fan from day one of any team, any sport, because there's not a whole lot of new teams and professional leagues, just popping up out of nowhere. You see that in Vegas now. But that really hasn't happened a whole lot in major sports, to be a fan literally from day one of the start of the franchise. It's really cool. I mean, no matter how you look at it, especially if you are from the city or if you're living in the city that the team is playing in, it's just awesome. It's really cool. What have you seen in local hockey from back then to now? Because I'm assuming it's a lot bigger now than it was back then. But can you take me through a little bit of local hockey and what the San Jose community, how it feels about the sport from back then to now?
Back in 1991, I think you can count like the amount of sheets of ice with like maybe 1.5 hands. I mean, there was just one in Santa Rosa, Berkeley. There was like the only rink in San Jose, in the actual city of San Jose, was a small rink in a shopping mall. Back in 1991, that changed once the Sharks arrived. The Sharks' marketing campaigns, whether it was on ice, on roller, on street. They really got people into the game. Of course, it helped that they had probably the hottest logo and team colors that year. I think they remember it was like only the Chicago Bulls were selling more merch than the Sharks were among the four pro sports leagues in North America. And it was just that combination. And then 1994, they finally got the okay to build the what's now known as Solar for America Ice, the Sharks practice facility. They had two rinks there, and then it started blossoming. You saw like another one in the actually two in the peninsula, one in Oakland, in downtown Oakland, which was really nice. And then another one in Fremont that was actually partially owned by like former King Luke Robitaille and Christy Yamaguchi in Fremont, which is just north of San Jose. And they it's just really grown over the course of time. And now that Sharks ice rink in San Jose where the Sharks practice, like I said, it was a two sheet ice rink. It's now four. It's considered the largest rink west of the Mississippi, with a bar and everything. They just refurbished the original two rinks. It's really caught on, but that 94 playoff run really invigorated the city into a hockey craze market. And yeah, it's not like a New York or Boston or any of the Canadian markets, but the passion is there. Of course, it doesn't help that you have all kinds of other pro sports teams competing for the dollar. So the Sharks don't get as much love in the local media, but when they make moves, they make moves, and they get, time to put my teal back on.
Ooh. 94, by the way, a great year for my favorite team, the New York Rangers, obviously, Stanley Cup champions. Right. Speaking of moves the Sharks have made recently, a few days ago, the San Jose Sharks pulled it off. They got one of arguably the best defensemen on the face of the earth in the entire galaxy and the whole universe. They got Erik Karlsson, and as well as a 22-year-old minor leaguer, Francis Perron, 15 points in 44 AHL games with the Barracuda, with the Belleville Senators last season. And in exchange, the Ottawa Senators, first of all, they didn't get nearly as much as they could have gotten. They got Chris Tierney, a center, 40 points last season, played in all 82 games, a penalty killer, 24 years old, according to SportingNews.com, which I researched a little bit of prior to the show, of course. Near the bottom in both Corsi 4 relative and expected goals 4 relative. So basically what that means is when Chris Tierney is on the ice, the other team is expected to score more and have the puck more. They got Dylan DeMello, who's a defenseman, 20 points, no goals in 63 games played last season. Finished second among Sharks defensemen with a 273 expected goals relative, but placed in the middle of the defenseman with a negative 0.82 Corsi 4 relative, of course, which again means on the ice, when Dylan DeMello is on the ice, the Sharks will score more, but the opponent will have a little more possession of the puck. They also got Josh Norris, a 19-year-old, drafted in the first round of the 2017 draft, 23 points in the NCAA last year, but will be the first-line center for Michigan this season. They got Rudolph Balsers, I'm assuming that's how you pronounce his last name, 21-year-old. Left winger, fifth round pick by San Jose in 2015, 48 points in 67 games played with the Barracuda last season. They got a 2020 first round pick. If San Jose re-signs Karlsson after he hits free agency next offseason, Ottawa will also get a 2021 second-round selection. And also, the earliest possible pick chronologically the Sens can give, the Sharks can give the Sens, is the 2019 first-round pick. The Sharks also owe the Sabres their first-round pick in the next NHL draft as a condition for signing re-signing Evander Kane. But with the additional condition that they make the playoffs. So, I mean, barring a catastrophe, they will make the playoffs. So if they somehow miss the playoffs, they can send this 2019 pick to Ottawa and their 2020 first round pick to Buffalo. If not, if they don't make the playoffs, it's a disaster. They probably, barring a catastrophe, they'll make the playoffs. So if they do make the playoffs, the Senators will land that 2020 first round pick. So that means the Ottawa Senators, with all of this in mind, still don't have a first round pick in 2019. Their first round pick is currently in Colorado, after the Matt Duchene deal. So through all of this, they gave up their best defenseman. They gave up their absolutely bar none best defenseman in Ottawa, one of the best defensemen in the entire world. They also, by the way, got a conditional 2019 second round pick. They still don't have a first round pick in next year's draft. How does that happen? What do you think about this deal? Talk to me a little bit about the pieces that went back and forth. What do you think about this trade as a whole?
The magic of Doug Wilson. He has pulled off some unbelievable trades in years past. But getting into this trade for Carlson and Perron, Chris Tierney, really solid two-way centerman. Definitely started flourishing offensively last season with San Jose. He definitely got some more chances on the power play. But he was a third-line center for the team. Great penalty killer, as you said. He's going to be a solid centerman. He'll probably be their number two centerman in Ottawa at the rate that they're going. Dylan DeMello. Now, this is the interesting story about Dylan DeMello. He was a restricted free agent. The Sharks chose not to sign him. So essentially, he became an unrestricted free agent on July 1st. And then a week or so later, the Sharks did sign him. And now he's part of this trade.
Wow.
Just putting that out there. Joshua Norris, if you remember the coverage of the 2017 draft, he was the one that had the little troll doll with him for good luck. He's going to eventually become a good centerman. I'm not sure if he's going to be top notch just yet, but it's still early in his career and he's at Michigan. It remains to be seen. You never know. Rudolph Spalsters was a stud for the Barracuda. We were really excited about his development this year. And going into camp, we really thought that he was going to probably make the roster spot as a third line winger or fourth line winger. Looked really promising. Thought he was going to make the step up. As for the picks, let's be real here. The Sharks, if they fall apart and miss the playoffs, it's shame on them. It's a tough thing to consider if they do. They were already talking about re-signing Carlson the second he landed, or since I take it back, because Doug Wilson went to Ottawa to get this deal done. The second that the deal was done, they were hoping to talk about an extension. And according to Pierre LeBrun of TSN and The Athletic, they really can't sign him until after the trade deadline to get that eighth year in. So don't be surprised if nothing comes up about a contract extension right away until after the trade deadline. I could see that happening, barring a complete meltdown from the Sharks. As for the extra pick, if Carlson's on the Eastern Conference roster, he's not going anywhere. Unless it absolutely falls apart, he's not going to go anywhere this season. If they did, the Sharks are going to want a ton in return for him. So they'll probably get a first round pick back.
I mean, absolutely.
In return for,
I don't know if you saw the video of Pierre Dorion on live TV. I believe it was yesterday. Or a couple of days ago, he was with Elliot Friedman and somebody else. He got asked the question, what does he think about the Senators? And Pierre Dorion just stared blankly at nothing for about 5 seconds and then said, we're a team. He looked lost. I don't think I am honestly concerned for him because he looked like he had no idea where he was. It was scary watching because the clip on Twitter was about 7 seconds long. It obviously wasn't the whole interview, but he looked devastated because the team is a mess. The fans, you know, the fans want him out. The fans want Melnick out. Ottawa's a disaster, and Pierre Dorion doesn't make that situation better because if, you know, watching that clip, it looked like he forgot what country he's in. It's not good. Not good. Just not good. You were mentioning a little earlier about Balcer's potentially making the roster for San Jose, but, you know, because he didn't, obviously because he got traded to Ottawa, what do you think about the bottom six forwards for San Jose? Because the top six is really good. You have Evander Kane, Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski, Timo Meier, Logan Couture, Tomas Hertl, right? That's a solid top six. However, you look at the bottom six. You have Jonas Donskoy, Kevin LeBanc, Marcus Sorensen, Dylan Gambrell, Melker Carlson, and DailyFaceoff.com also has Antti Suomela making the team. Yep. Let's say a Kane, you know, Evander Kane gets hurt. Let's hope he doesn't, obviously. But let's say, you know, hypothetically he does. Or let's say Couture misses, I don't know, 10, 15 games or what, or, you know, whatever, you know, happens. He gets a freak, you know, sprains his wrist or I don't know, what, you know, hypothetically whatever happens. Who would step up and produce at a close to, you know, rate, like a Couture, like a Kane would? Because I'm looking at this bottom six, and while they can produce at an okay level on the third, on the fourth line, I'm very concerned personally about how well depth players can not only score on the third, on the fourth line, but if they would need to jump to the top six, if they would be able to do that. Because if, you know, again, if a Kane or a Couture or a Pavelski or whoever gets hurt, again, let's hope they don't. But if they do, I am very concerned about the bottom six being able to patch the holes while they get better. What do you think about that?
It's one of the questions that we were concerned about when we saw that Tierney was part of the deal. But you have a good nucleus, and the thing with the Sharks, they went through some of that injury bug. The year that they went to the Stanley Cup final, Couture hurt his ankle and he was out for like a couple of months. So they've gone through those stretches before with it. With Evander Kane, you got your top three are going to be most likely. It's going to be, you know, Thornton, Pavelski, Kane, Couture, Hertl. And, you know, most likely Timo Meier, but it also could be Kevin LeBanc. Both guys have been really superb and been very impressed, especially when they started their professional careers with the AHL club, the San Jose Barracuda. You also have Marcus Sorensen, who's become a little bit of a playoff hero as well. He's looked very promising, and he's in a contract year. I wouldn't be surprised if his game steps up. Dylan Gambrell is slowly starting to be a center, but he's probably going to be the fourth line or third line center. You mentioned Suomela, and the one thing that Doug Wilson has done is he's found these European gems every year. He found Melker Carlson, who at one time was on the line with both Joes early on in his NHL career. He's able to move all over the place. And Carlson usually is that guy that kind of just fills the void and can produce. He's got a great shot. Jonas Donskoy, he was a key contributor to the team in 2016. With their playoff run, of course, he had the overtime winner in Game 3 of the Cup final against Pittsburgh. So he has that scoring touch. He gelled really well with Pavelski and Kane during the playoffs last year. Timo Meier is starting to really start to flourish. He had a little bit of a slow start. He got his first NHL goal in his first NHL game, but he had little bit of a slow start getting his offensive going. He finished nearly with 20 goals last season, some of them clutch moves. Definitely can throw the body around too, but also has a good hard shot and likes to shoot the puck too. And back to Kevin LeBanc, we almost call him Jumbo Jr. because he does like to pass a little bit, and we've been kind of getting on him. It's like, okay, shoot the puck. Seriously, you have a good shot, shoot the puck. So they have a lot of key guys that can come in and do an admirable job. Now, are they going to be Logan Couture, Evander Kane-esque? No, but they can do get the job done. And then they have a couple of prospects that they are really into, like Maxim Latunov, Alexander Chmelevsky, who came in late, along with Ivan Chekhovic, who came in late and got the San Jose Barracuda, who were like 8-10 points out of a playoff spot with like 2-3 weeks to go, and got them into the playoffs in the AHL. So they definitely have a lot of prospects that they can hopefully bank on in the near future. But for right now, you have a decent amount of players that can step up and flourish pretty well.
So talk to me a little bit about the prospect chart for the Sharks, because as we mentioned, they traded Norris, they traded a first-round pick, they traded, second-round pick, they traded the 21-year-old winger that you were very high on, of course, Rudolph Balcers. What are the, let's say, top three or top four, top five prospects for the Sharks as of now? Because, again, Norris is gone, Balcers is gone. Who else can now fill up this top five list for the Sharks? Is it a top 10 list in the league, or are they just completely all in on the Cup right now this season? I mean, obviously they are because they traded for Carlson, but let's say they don't make it. Let's say they don't win this year. Is the prospect list, the top five, good enough to go for it again, next year or in 2 years or whatever? Or are they really at the limit of, if we don't make it this year or next year, we have to rebuild? What do you think about the prospects in San Jose?
The prospects seem pretty good, and I say that a little gingerly, because a few years ago, this development crew was just at the bottom of the barrel. The Sharks had been using, similar to what you saw in the Carlson trade, prospects and picks to try to win now. And of course, it didn't happen for them. My thinking is this, is that they are all in on winning the Cup. I think it was a little bit of a reality check after 2014 with what the Kings did to them. I won't remind what happened in that one, because it's still a pain in the back of Sharks fans' minds. But at the same time, that was a reality check that, okay, we need to get things back in the shape. And they start building up the prospect pool again. And 2015 with Timo Meier, I think he was ninth overall. That was probably their highest first round pick that they actually used in quite some time. And so you have Meier, but he's already on the NHL roster. You look at from a forward perspective, Chmelevsky, Chekhovic, maybe even Noah Gregor, Philip Sandberg has been there. He's the guy that I really liked, who's got a great shot. He's got some speed, but definitely a little on the shorter side. And I'm trying to hope I can get this name right because I know my crew at Teal Town USA is going to kill me for not getting this. Jaden Hagelwax. He's definitely a short, like, Tyler Johnson, maybe Theo Fleury flourishing talent. No grit necessarily with him in the sense compared to Fleury, but he definitely has the speed. He definitely has a great shot. And in the defense, they've been kind of been waiting on Jeremy Waugh, but he's had some knee issues lately. So they're really high on their first round pick, Ryan Merkley out of Guelph. I don't think he's going to make the club this year. I think he's going to go back to the OHL, and I think he's really a prospect to be looked for. Nick DeSimone, another defenseman that they're really high on, along with Michael Brzezinski. They have some decent development core going on. Is it ready to come in next season? Probably not. I think the mindset is for the Sharks to be all in, and maybe up until a potential work stoppage, whether it's in 2020 or 2021, because they know that's coming, and they really want to try to get a cup into the hands of the likes of this core group before it moves on. Because let's be real here, Vlasic's over 30. Jumbo is going to be 40 next year. Pavelski is in his 30s. And it's just they have a lot of guys that are getting up there in the age. But you think about it, in the forwards, Jumbo's 39, Pavelski's 34. On defense, Vlasic's 31. Justin Braun's 31. Brent Burns is 33. Outside of that, they're all either in roughly in their mid 20s, with a few 21 and 22 here and there. So they've already started to have that nucleus rebuild going. It'll be just a little pieces down the road, and those who take the challenge and flourish, whether it's in the minors with the Barracuda or come up from junior, should be quite interesting.
For the record, in 2016, when they went to the final, before that season, I was one of the people that were screaming for a rebuild, right? Because you saw year after year the Sharks would do really well in the regular season, and then they would blow it in the playoffs year after year after year. So eventually, I thought it would be the sensible decision to say, okay, Joe Thornton at the time, there was a lot of trade rumors surrounding him. There were a lot of trade rumors surrounding pretty much everybody on that roster. I thought it'd be sensible to say, okay, we've tried this long enough. Let's rebuild. Let's do something else. It didn't happen. And then what happened? I mean, San Jose shocked everyone and made the final. But let's take a look at last season. The Sharks, exactly 100 points, 45 wins. The Knights were above them at 109, which, I mean, that's a whole different rabbit hole that we can jump into. The Knights, I mean, the Knights were absolutely...
Don't get me started.
Yeah. The Knights, I mean, surpassed every expectation and then some. The Anaheim Ducks, 101 points, which the Ducks, I don't think... they're probably not going to make the playoffs next season. If I'm going to be 100% real here, Getzlaf is not Getzlaf anymore. Corey Perry is just not Corey Perry anymore. John Gibson, obviously, is still a great goaltender, but goaltending can, if you're not a top three goalie in the NHL, goaltending can only get you so far. So, honestly, with this Carlson trade, I think the Sharks probably going to win the division. You have either the Sharks or the Knights. What, either one. Before like 2 weeks ago, I was very doubtful on the Vegas Golden Knights. And then Ken Bulkey, who runs Sinbin Vegas, came on and convinced me otherwise. And now with Max Pacioretty in the mix, I mean, Vegas is going to be pretty solid. Sharks or Knights for number one, number two. You can interchange, you know, whichever, you know, which on a Tuesday you can say the Knights are going to win, and then the next day the Sharks are going to win. You know, it doesn't really matter. Number three, I mean, probably L.A. Maybe with Kovalchuk, we'll see. You know, we'll see if he can replicate some of the earlier success that he had. Obviously, he's still going to be really good. He still has that incredible shot that hasn't gone anywhere. He has slowed down a little bit, but you know, only time will tell what will happen in L.A. But what is the realistic, you know, do you think point total for San Jose? You know, give or take, obviously a few points, but San Jose, now with Erik Karlsson, I mean, they have Vlasic, Brent Burns, and Erik Karlsson on the same team. That is mind-boggling. That is incredible. Mark Edward Vlasic, by the way, does not get nearly the credit he deserves. Vlasic is a Canadian Olympian, a defenseman, Canadian Olympian. Mind you, this was before when NHL players went to the Olympics. You think about all the phenomenal Canadian defensemen in the NHL. Vlasic was there, and not only was he there, he was playing top two, top four minutes on that team. Vlasic is a sincerely underappreciated player, and I wish Vlasic would get more credit. Maybe because he's in San Jose. I mean, I don't know. But Vlasic is just such a great player. He doesn't get the credit he deserves. You know, on top of that, the Sharks probably 110, 111 points, if all goes well, of course. If half the team gets injured and then, you know, and the snowball effect goes from there, obviously we'll say something different. But as of now, if everyone stays healthy, Sharks probably going to win the division. But again, that bottom six scares me a little bit. What do you think is the realistic expectation for the Sharks this season? If everyone stays relatively healthy and if all goes according to plan, how are the Sharks going to look in April come playoff time?
Oh, they're going to be crazy good, I think, in my mind. I mean, picture in this mind having for 60 minutes... For 60 minutes, having on the ice Brent Burns, Mark Edward Vlasic, Erik Karlsson. One of those guys is going to be on the ice the entire game. It is just absolutely crazy to fathom. I mean, I remember listening to a radio station up in Vancouver because they don't talk much hockey on the sports stations out here. They're too busy talking about football and what happened to the Giants. But they're comparing who's got the better defensive core, San Jose or the Nashville Predators. And you can totally make that argument. But at the same time, you know, that those three defensive pairings, I mean, and in my mind, I think you have to keep Vlasic and Justin Braun together. They just have really good chemistry together. Burns and most likely will either be Joakim Ryan, who was very, very nice, stay at home, definitely got things done for Burnsy to do his crazy shenanigans. Brendan Dillon, you know, he seemed to be the downer of the group. Especially when he was paired with Pulock in the 2016 playoffs, but he stepped it up. He's improved his skating. He's improved his puck handling skills. They looked really, really good defensively when he was paired with somebody else like Dylan DeMello or Tim Head is another guy that the Sharks have in waiting. He's probably going to be like alternating back and forth with Joakim Ryan on there. It's hard to fathom what this team can do, and Joe Thornton's already been skating, and he's been skating good. I mean, who knows how much he's really feeling and hurting, but it's just been an unbelievable turn of events. And then you forget, you kind of forget with all the trade happening that Evander Kane re-signed with this team. And so you try not to bank on your top six to get the scoring done, but you also have some key additions like Donskoy, LeBanc, who can bury the pucks. Sumela has been highly touted, and he's only played one preseason game, but he's looking good. Donskoy, he can also deliver the clutch goal and the speedster. So I say probably around 105 points for the Sharks, because you are playing in the Pacific. You are going to have those tough games. I mean, yeah, sure, you laugh at Vancouver. I mean, Vancouver is going to be it should be a good easy win, I guess you could say, for lack of better terms.
They don't have a goalie. They don't have goalies.
And they won't bring up Thatcher Demko anytime soon. And which I think is a great idea for them, because they need to build their defense out. Arizona's going to be a little bit better. They're not going to be playoff bound, but they might give a fight. I think they will. Calgary, the same thing. They got the real deal, James Neal. But again, their goaltending situation is iffy, even though Mike Smith has always played so tough against the Sharks, especially when he was a member of the Desert Dogs. Anaheim, I think, unfortunately, showed their true colors during the playoffs against the Sharks last year. They did not look good. I mean, they were able to shut down Getzlaff and Perry, along with Raquel. It'll be interesting to see if they get Patrick Eves back, if he's back to even strength with how he's doing. LA, it's tough to say. LA has its ups and downs. I was surprised at how quickly LA went out against Vegas. But then again,
everyone, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at Jonathan Quick, at the performance he put in that four-game sweep that he lost. I mean, he had unbelievable saves and kept the team in the game. The offense isn't there. Will Kovalchuk reinvigorate things? I can't see that happening. But for Edmonton, Edmonton's got a lot of pressure. Edmonton's got so much pressure on them to succeed. It's do or die for Todd McLellan, I think. We talked to, on our podcast, we had talked to Drew Remenda, the Oilers color analyst, and there's some high expectancy for them to make the playoffs and do something, especially since you have Connor McDavid, or it's like we like to call him Connor McJesus, or when we want to make fun of him, Connor McBroken. It's one of those things where if their goaltending's good, they're going to be okay. If their defense is going to be struggling, and I think Sakara is out for a bit, it'll be interesting. But they got Nurse back, so that's going to be a huge one. But yeah, it's going to be a battle between San Jose and the Vegas Golden Knights for the top spot in the Pacific. But it also depends on who these teams get in the first round. If a team like Edmonton goes up against San Jose, they'll probably give them a little bit run of their money. I think if it's L.A. or Anaheim, I think San Jose's got that taken care of. So I say 104 points. They'll definitely have – they should have a coast into the first round, and then that battle against Vegas should be quite interesting. And hopefully – if you're San Jose, they don't come out too banged up against when they go up against the Central Division foe in the conference final.
I thought you brought up some great points. I mean, first of all, the Canucks need, I mean, anybody between the pipes, literally anybody. Nielsen's not a starter. Markstrom, not a starter. I do cover the Syracuse hockey team. And let me tell you something. I personally believe a couple of those goalies could make a run for the starting position instead of Nielsen or Markstrom. Both of them are AHL caliber goaltenders. They're not NHL goaltenders. Therefore, Vancouver, you know, you can Brock Besser can score 400 points. At the end of the day, you can't win every game 9-8. Vancouver's going to give up so many goals. It doesn't matter. Vancouver's not going to make playoffs at all. Edmonton, the thing with Edmonton, listen, when you trade an MVP for a top four defenseman, and when you trade Jordan Eberle for a second/third line center, bad things are going to happen. Bad things are going to happen. That's kind of, I mean, that's you know, the sky is blue. Like, there's, you know, it's not rocket science here. When you make terrible trades, the team suffers. There's no, I mean, you know, I'm not reinventing the wheel here. That's exactly what's going to happen. So when you take that into consideration, Arizona, I think, I said this earlier on a couple weeks ago, the Coyotes are going to push. Are they going to make the playoffs? I mean, we'll see. Probably not, but they will be better than they were last season with just 70 points on the board last season. They will probably have around the amount the Flames did last season. They had 84 points last season, 37 wins. Arizona will probably be somewhere in that range. Arizona won't be that bad. You know, they did improve the team overall, especially with getting Galchenyuk for a guy who scored 9 goals last season in Max Domi. So Arizona...
And you have Clayton...
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Go on.
I was going to say, and don't forget, you have Clayton Keller on there too. It's... They could... If Edmonton and Anaheim and maybe even LA falter, Arizona could sneak in.
Yeah.
And you don't want the, we're here, now we can do some damage, because that's probably one of the more dangerous teams to play in the playoffs, especially early on.
Absolutely. I mean, the Sharks, as it is, are probably going to either win or compete for the Pacific Division title. But, you know, as is, they don't have too much competition in the Pacific. I mean, obviously, you have the Knights, you have the Kings, you have the Flames with... with James Neal now, you have other teams as well in the mix. But Mike Smith scares me as someone that loves goaltenders. I mean, as someone that was a goalie in another life, I love goaltenders. And as someone that has watched Henrik Lundqvist since I was a little kid, Henrik Lundqvist is a god to me in a sense. Henrik Lundqvist is so good at what he does that watching him is such a treat. But, you know, watching Mike Smith play scares me. I saw bits and pieces of the preseason game against the Bruins this morning. We're recording, by the way, Wednesday night again because we couldn't make, you know, tomorrow work. So we were recording Wednesday night again, except, you know, not Thursday. So, you know, I watched parts of the Bruins Flames preseason game this morning. Mike Smith, once again, out of his crease, gave up the puck, and just, you know, glided back to his paint, and then he gave up a bad goal because he wasn't in position. And that seems to happen with Mike Smith, where he either does that or he's just not in position or whatever happens. And whatever Mike Smith plays, he either does really well or just gives up terrible goals. And Mike Smith scares me as someone that loves goalies. The Flames could be a very solid team, especially with the trades that they made this offseason. Mike Smith scares me. He's very good when he's on his game. When he's not, he scares me. But let's move on to the poll question for this week. How many points will Erik Karlsson realistically score this season if he's healthy and plays all 82 games? The four options were less than 60, 60 to 70, 70 to 80, or more than 80. Now, over almost 150 people voted at the time of this recording, and I got a couple of responses here, but I want to read the poll first. So less than 60, 11% said the first option, less than 60. 38% said Karlsson would be in the 60 to 70 range. 34% said 70 to 80 range, and 17% said 80 plus. Now, personally, I don't know if you voted or not, but I voted for 80 plus. Erik Karlsson on the power play with Brent Burns and Pavelski
yes.
and Joe Thornton and Evander Kane. I mean, again, you know, if all goes well, if you know, everyone plays 82 games, Erik Karlsson is going to score more than 80 points. You know, forget 5-on-5 for a second. He's going to score on, like, every power play. That power play is going to be the most dynamic power play in the league, minus Ovechkin's shot from the middle of the circle. I mean, like, that's a disgustingly good power play. But a couple mm-hmm. responses that I got that I want to read to you, and I want your opinion on, one of which was from JD Killo at JD_MediaMonster said, Burns had 67 last year, 27 on the power play. Karlsson had 62 with 18 on the power play. The Sharks lack an explosive scoring ability and need all lines contributing to be good. Can Couture score 30 again? Will Burns still be the go-to? Too many questions, less than 60 points. What do you think about that?
They have a good point. JD really has a good point, because the problem with the Sharks' power play has always been its complacency and its predictability. For years, it was rim the puck around, get it to Jumbo, and have him make a pass. And then I think in 2016, we started seeing more towards, okay, get it to Burnsy, let him just... You know, once it gets to him, he's just letting that puck go. And it started with the Stanley Cup final against Pittsburgh that people started catching on to Burns having the puck and being the guy that, you know, throws the puck on net or shoots it on net, either hopes for a deflection or goes in. And that's the problem with the Sharks, is that their complacency on the power play really hurts them. Does that change with Karlsson? I would certainly hope so. I mean, I think whoever's in charge of the power play, and I believe it's Steve Spott, is kind of on the tough horse here, because when the Sharks' power play works, and especially when it works in the playoffs, this team is very dangerous. And to have that extra intimidation factor with not just having all those guys on the power play, I mean, my God, who do you put in your number one power play unit for San Jose?
Who do you cover if you're the defense? Yeah. Who do you cover? You have, let's say, Brent Burns and Karlsson on the blue line, let's say, and you have Pavelski, Kane, Thornton, who do you cover? Who do you leave open?
And here's another thing. I'm going to get grief for suggesting this. Who's to say they just put maybe Burnsy in front of the goaltender to be that Thomas Holmstrom guy and just be that big body in front with Karlsson at the point? It changes up things all over the place. But yeah, who do you cover? And then you have the second power play unit, which would be just as good. Because where do you put Couture? Where do you put Pavelski? You know, where do you put Kane? Where do you put Jumbo on there? It's a great problem to have. But yeah, the key to success for the Sharks to win the Stanley Cup is their success on the power play. So if they have the usual rim around boards, get it to Burns, it's not going to happen. If they spice things up, kind of give their opponents, you know, fits on where they're going to go and such, watch out. And it'll be quite interesting to see what it looks like.
Absolutely. And someone else that tweeted at the poll, at E-E-R-O-O-K-A-H, Iruka, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm not sure. Don't hate me if I pronounce it and I'll mispronounce it. They said should be easily 80 plus with the supporting cast he's got, which I think is fair. I think that's the correct take here, because you add the best defenseman in the galaxy to your team, everyone will benefit. Everyone's going to benefit.
Everyone should benefit. Go ahead.
I was done pretty much. I mean, like, everyone, Karlsson's going to benefit with himself, because now he's on an actual team, and the rest of the team's going to benefit because they got the best defenseman in the world.
Yeah, in the his offensive creativity, I think I remember I was watching some of his highlights, like the nice slap shot pass over to former Shark Milan Mihalic, for a pretty goal. I mean, there's so much creativity. It'll be crazy. We talk about the bottom six scoring. You know, essentially, maybe that's where your bottom six scoring is. They might be on the ice with Carlson or Burns. And that's where your creativity scoring will come from. To me, I picked 70 to 80 because I think the uptick on who do you cover, along with, well, you also have Burns, you also have Kane, you also have Couture, Pavelski, Thornton, Meyer, Hurdle. I mean, we barely talked about Tomas Hurdle and what he's done in the past year. It's just... I think the wealth of points will be spread around, but I can't see them like going 80 or 100. It's possible, but I just can't see it. So that's why I went with 70 to 80. And I think both Burns and Carlson would get that.
That's a fair take for sure. I mean, by the way, thank you to Tomas Hurdle for the goals that he scored against Marty Biron. I love Marty Biron, don't get me wrong, but because Biron retired, the Rangers called up Cam Talbot, and then they traded Cam Talbot, and you know, and the whole thing, you know, and then that whole thing started. So as an aside, Marty Biron, I love you. Thank you, Tomas Hurdle, for starting that whole thing. Last question here before I let you go. Martin Jones has never had a higher save percentage than .918, not even a 92 on 918. Last season, according to Hockey Reference, his goalie point share was 9.9, which means that Martin Jones added about 10 points to the standings for the Sharks, whereas if you put the league average in there, it would be zero. So he added 9.9 points more to the Sharks' standings than the average goaltender would. However, I don't know, right, as of right now, as of September 19th, 2018, I am not 100% sold on Martin Jones being able to carry the team to a Stanley Cup victory. Because you can make the argument that you don't necessarily need a top 10 goalie to win the cup. We've seen that with Murray and the Penguins. We've seen that from Corey Crawford and the Blackhawks. Although Corey Crawford is better than people would give him credit for, is he a top 10 goalie? I mean, we can have that discussion. He's not top 5. You know, we can have a good conversation about, do you need a top 5, top 10 goalie to win the cup? You know, Holtby, obviously top 5 goalie right now, won the cup last season. After, of course, losing the starting position for the first two games, then yeah, the Blue Jackets winning both of those games, and then Holtby took over and then led the whole team to the cup. But as it stands right now, I'm not saying that I can't be swayed, because I easily can, but right now I just have a question mark as to Martin Jones's ability between the pipes to, if the Sharks were down, let's say it's, I don't know, game five of the final. It's a 2-2 series tie, right? Let's say it's either tied or the Sharks are down one late, or or some similar situation. And Martin Jones needs to make that series-defining save. We saw it last year with the Holtby stick save, right? That was the series-defining save. After that save, we all felt it. The Caps were going to win the series. We all felt it. We didn't know it, obviously, but we just had the feeling the Caps were going to win it. A few years ago in the Eastern Conference Final, when the Rangers were playing the Canadiens and Henrik Lundqvist made that impossible blocker, you know, that spinning save or whatever, you knew the Rangers were going to win that series. You just knew. That was the series-defining save. My question to you is, Martin Jones, is he capable of making that series-defining save to push the Sharks to a Cup victory?
I'll say yes, and I'll tell you why. He's had a number of saves, and I remember this specifically because I was at Game 6 when they lost to Pittsburgh in 2016. He had to make unreal save after unreal save, and the cross ice one, cross ice save, you know, like on a one timer and such, he had it down perfectly. He looked phenomenal. That being said, he has been known to give up a little bit of a softie on a rare occasion. I'll never forget when he first started in San Jose, the first game, I think it was like his second shot, he lets a slapper in. Everybody's freaking out. And then I think he went on like a 300-minute shutout streak of not allowing any opponent a goal in that time. So he's quite capable of it. But I also think you need to give him rest. And that's where I see Arundel come into play. Now, Arundel started with the Worcester Sharks, and then they moved out here to be the Barracuda. He has really played solid goaltending for San Jose when he's been called up to the task. He's let Martin Jones rest, which was one of the reasons why they went out to get a James Reimer, because they had overused him that first season in San Jose. So I think as long as he gets his rest in between and continues to make the save, and let's be real here, this is probably the best defensive crew he's worked with in San Jose. Yeah, you had Vlasic and Burns already, but you also had Roman Pulak. Dylan wasn't exactly the best right away. He's gotten better. You don't have you have a good, solid defense in front of him. You have a defense first system with some puck possession that Peter DeBoer, or what we like to call him PDB, uses to achieve success in the organization. I just think you get that hot goaltender and you make those saves, and yeah, you might regret one here and there. You can go wonders, but you got to be very careful with how you use him and how much you use him in the regular season.
Eric, you're the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on and for giving me your time. I really appreciate it. I've been coughing throughout this whole ordeal. I've been sick for the past few days. I'm going to clean it up a little bit and make the listener, thank you for listening, not have to hear all of that for the most part.
We didn't hear any of your snot rockets, so it's totally fine.
That's what we all want, right? I mean, as far as I know, no one wants to hear that. So, you know, that's good. But Eric, you're the best. Tell everyone where they can read your stuff, where they can listen to you, where they can follow you. Tell us everything we need to know about Eric Kura on social media.
Well, I'm 5'8". I'm kidding. you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at PuckEye14. I'm in charge of TealTownUSA.com. It's a website that pertains to all things San Jose Sharks. What we also do, and like I mentioned before, the coverage in the Bay Area is a little rough for the Sharks. And you got so many pro sports teams. You also got the college teams. So they don't get as much love. And that's when we started Teal Town After Dark, which is a live online interactive post-game show that we do after every game on YouTube. So check us out on YouTube at Teal Town USA. Hit, or as I like to say, smash that subscribe button. We do a lot of audio content.
Can we bite it? Can we bite it like the Sharks do in their logo? Can we bite the subscribe logo, the subscribe button?
You can bite it, but of course you will never choke on it.
The Sharks did a couple years ago.
I said we weren't going to talk about that.
That's fair. That's fair.
But yeah, check us out on the social media everywhere. It's Teal Town USA, where it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, you name it, we are all over it. So check us out at Teal Town USA. Just Google us and subscribe to us in every way possible.
Eric, you're the best. Thank you so much for coming on, and I'll talk to you again real soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And that, of course, was Chell Squared. I'm your host, Andrew Chelney. And as always, I'll talk to you again next week.